So welcome. Just a couple of preliminary announcements here. We are live from the Osavie Hall in Philadelphia on a hybrid Zoom meeting. We want to thank you for joining us in an effort to maintain a fragrance-free zone for those coming into the lodge. And of course, you know, pandemic precautions are applicable as well. So during the pandemic, it has often been a comforting and joyful experience to Zoom to a meeting. It is important to recall the ULT Declaration. Philadelphia ULT meetings maintain anonymity, offer no crosstalk or side issues of personal anecdotes. Participants speak directly to the chairperson when called upon. These are traditions that are designed to welcome all to the study of the philosophy of theosophy without the distractions of any social differentiations or personal attributes. Let us all work to maintain these declared traditions. And we also want to mention that if not speaking, please mute your microphone. And if moving around, please turn the camera off. So we will turn the meeting over to the chairperson now. Thank you.
Unmute, please.
Good morning, and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists in Philadelphia. We will have our meeting begun by a student who will give us, read the declaration and give us the announcements.
Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy, no professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences or opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles for truer realization of the self, founder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, similarity of aim, purpose and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity, without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves, to study and otherwise, be the better able to help and teach others. True theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. The announcements on Sunday, January 30th, 2022 at the Philadelphia Lodge. The common ground among all the lodges is the declaration, yet each lodge is autonomous and maintains its own schedule of meetings. All lodge meetings are open to the public and are held specifically to disseminate the fundamental teachings and principles of the philosophy of theosophy and at all lodge meetings and atmosphere characterized by anonymity and impersonality is sought. And participants are asked to help establish and maintain such an atmosphere by addressing their comments to the chair. All lodges are sustained by voluntary contributions of time, money, and work. It is these contributions which support and sustain lodge activities. Volunteers who came before us kept the philosophy of Theosophy available for us, just as we now keep these same ideas available for others. Become a volunteer and or to make a contribution, please contact the Philadelphia Lodge and or the Lodge of one's choice, a listing of which can be found at the Phoenix, Arizona Lodge website. The purchase of Straight Line Theosophical materials may be gotten from Theosophy Company in Los Angeles, California. Downloaded from the Phoenix, Arizona Lodge website and or purchased at the Philadelphia Lodge on site only on Sunday mornings. To keep these teachings available, the Philadelphia Lodge meets on Sundays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. The Sunday presentation is from 11 until 12 noon. The door to Theosophy Hall opens at 10:30. Each Sunday's topic is on some aspect of a monthly umbrella theme, which is explored in some depth, format of a forum, lecture talk, or panel discussion. The theme being studied for the month of January is the path of spiritual evolution. And the lecture for today, which is the last one for the month, is entitled The Victorious Virtuous Mind. For the month of February, the umbrella theme is The Keys of Virtue. And the forum presentation next Sunday, February 6th, is entitled The Keys of Charity and Love. Sunday presentations are recorded, and the podcasts may be listened to at the Philadelphia Lodge website. Sunday presentation is the only on-site, in-person, and Zoom-accessible meeting. The Wednesday evening study class meets from 7:30 to 8:45. We are continuing our yearly study in the Ocean of Theosophy by William Q. Judge. For the past few weeks, the theme has been reincarnation. And the topic for Wednesday, February 2nd, is reincarnation. Does lack of memory disprove? The Friday evening informal discussion group meets from 6:30 to 7:30. Continue to discuss many theosophical topics contained in the book Echoes from the Orient by William Q. Judge. Section 19 will be discussed this Friday, February 4th. Please note that the Wednesday and Friday meetings continue to be accessible only through Zoom, not on site. That concludes the general announcements for today. Next, there will be a reading, which will be followed by the lecture. This reading is from The Voice of the Silence by H.P. Blavatsky, fragment number 3, entitled The Seven Portals. Look on. What seest thou before thine eye, O aspirant of godlike wisdom? The cloak of darkness is upon the deep of matter. Within its folds I struggle. Beneath my gaze it deepens, Lord. It is dispelled beneath the waving of thy hand. The shadow moveth, creeping like the stretching serpent coils. It grows, swells out, and disappears in darkness. It is the shadow of thyself outside the path, cast on the darkness of thy sins. Yea, Lord, I see the path, its foot in mire, its summits lost in glorious light nirvanic. And now I see the ever-narrowing portals on the hard and thorny way to Nana. Thou seest well, Lano. These portals lead the aspiring across the waters onto the other shore. Each porter hath a golden key that opens this gate. These keys are 1. Dana, the key of charity and love immortal. 2. Sheila, the key of harmony in word and act. Key that counterbalances the cause and the effect and leaves no further room for karmic action. 3. Shanti, patience sweet that naught can ruffle. 4. Viraga, indifference to pleasure and to pain, illusion conquered, truth alone perceived. 5. Virya, the dauntless energy that fights its way to the supernal truth out of the mire of lies terrestrial. 6. Yana, whose golden gate once opened, leads the Nardal toward the realm of that eternal and its ceaseless contemplation. 7. Prajna, the key to which makes of a man a god, creating him a bodhisattva, son of the dhyanas. Such to the portals are the golden keys. For thou canst approach the last, O weaver of thy freedom, thou hast to master these paramitas of perfection, the virtues transcendental 6 and 10 in number, along the weary path. Again, the lecture for today is entitled The Victorious Virtuous Mind.
The victorious, virtuous mind. Well, we know if it's victorious, there must be a battle. So let's begin where we are. We live in a world of senses. We are consumed by our senses. What is consumed by it? Our mind. But the conflict comes in because the world is not moral. And this is brought on by the intellect. So we have a conflict, a deep-rooted conflict. So the question comes, what is real? Well, if our mind is taken up with senses, where must we begin? Well, we must begin in the mind, not in the body. And we must begin with our motive. Why do we come to this study? Why do we want to tread this path? We have to search deep within our heart and flush out that motive. Because we are constantly being deceived. To cultivate the quality of the heart, we are told that renunciation is the path. We can attest to that from our readings in the Bhagavad Gita every summer. The life of renunciation. But this waking consciousness, it lives in that world of sensation. So what do we need to do? We need to make the heart steady. And then we can let go of everything. Because good motive without knowledge makes sorry work sometimes. Can we distinguish between sense life and soul life? The mind isn't a victim of these internal images, which are composed of elemental lives from the desire principle. So we can use an analogy that life is like a bazaar, where we don't know the true value of things, but we go into the bazaar and we haggle and we bargain for what we need. And being there, we see things we want and we want more. And we're constantly deceived by our senses. But it is very necessary. Through the senses, we gather experience. And through this experience, we gather knowledge. And over time, we are able to discern the real from the unreal. So, how do we combat this? We are told that there is a God of this objective world, and we need to worship it. And that God is duty. Through duty, we cleanse ourselves, we cleanse the soul. Duty is the axis of life. Duty is what brings us in closer proximity to all of life. Now, this duty is guided by discrimination. And the discrimination is of what is real and what is unreal. What is soul and what is senses? What is mind and what is matter? What is beingness? And what is being? And through this, we're able to discriminate between selflessness and selfishness. And we're told that the culmination of this discrimination is renunciation of the fruits of our actions so that we can benefit humanity. That what we do not for ourselves, but we do for others. But the world we live in, these senses are coming at us, but we find that it's not only from the outer world that they attack us, but the inner world. And what happens is that these memories we have that come forward become the dust which rises from these memories and settles on the mind, taking away its capacity to reflect the divine ideas of Akasha. And the only way of brushing away this dust is through renunciation. So we must attain a virtuous mind. But we thought virtue was an attribute of the heart. We are told that the mind's feelings are integrated, or a union between mind and heart. For that to happen, the mind must become virtuous. That's a integration of the hands, the head, and the heart. We are faced with the grand delusion that we are separate from each other. But that is only in the sense world. In the soul world, we are told that there is a link between that world of experience and that world of divine thought, where we have an integration of the head and heart. That is found in the very first paramita of dana, of grand compassion. But this pathway between the lower mind and the higher mind, the demonic and the divine, is called the antahkarana. So what is that? Well, we know that as our conscience, that organ that we possess. This feeling of unity will illuminate the mind, because an enlightened mind can use that virtue of love, of dana. But this is charity and love. Immortal is not sentimental and sensuous or sensual, but egoically. Do we truly understand that the mind fructifies our attachments to objects of sense? So we have to detach from the lower. For once we do that, we can attach to the higher, but not until we detach from the lower. Now, these gratifications that we feel from the lower are felt by the elemental world of desire and perceptions. These are selfish actions. But if we can still these through the opposite, which is sacrifice. We have to remember that possessing true ideas makes us immune to the attacks of the enemy. Thoughts of others binds us to them. We go, oh, yes. But we can, for weal or woe, because remember, the thoughts we give to this universal philosophy binds us to those ideas. These thoughts are powerful binders. We see in the virtues that love is the foundation. And it's through love, through compassion, that we can embrace the world. Love creates harmony, but not without patience. We must be patient and ever enduring. Well, it talks about three high ideas or virtues: dauntless energy, contemplation, and then spiritual perception. But before we can arrive at that, we have to stand in the center, unaffected, detached. To the sensations of life. We must detach from the lower. So again, what this does, it empowers the higher. If we can let go of the lower, all that energy can be channeled into our higher nature. This is where the strength of the soul lies. This dauntless energy that when once felt and once been able to use, it empowers our ability to contemplate and to see the world for what it really is. And ultimately, to gain full spiritual perception. The paramitas, they are human, they are universal, and they are divine. They are the children of grand compassion. We find in these seven virtues practical occultism. No other place do we find such a pronouncement of practical occultism. These are words, but they have to be pondered over. They have to be considered. They have to be used. And they have to be made a living power in our life. It's like saying that they are theosophy. Compassion is no attribute. It is the law. We are light. We are life. We are love. When we become aware of what is real and what is unreal, we will live in this world of soul and not be controlled by the world of desire. We try to touch upon many things, but we think the idea of antahkarana, it's a word which we don't hear very often, but it's one that we find in theosophy. It's an internal organ. It is the voice of our experience and also a channel of the divine. We know it as conscience. Lend thy ear to that inner voice. So our talk this morning was about the victorious, virtuous mind. If we have any questions or comments, or if we need to stretch and wake up, we invite you to give us some feedback.
question?
Yes, please.
In the beginning of the talk, when describing the source of the battle, the mention of the senses, but the statement was also made that the conflict arises in or from the intellect. How does our intellect cause the conflict?
Well, our intellect, we well know, uses reason. And our intellect becomes cold and uncaring in many instances. So that's why we try to temper that intellect with compassion, so that the intellect becomes immoral. It becomes selfish. That's the immorality of life. And so there begins the conflict. The conflict is within us, because we know what is right to do. But we are led by our senses. And we think that this is the answer. If we follow our senses, we will be led to the path. Well, we'll be led to something, but it will be the path of destruction. We must start in the mind. The mind is the place where we begin our study of ourself. You know, and we, that study is enveloped with the idea of renunciation, sacrifice, duty. You know, it's amazing. We sometimes look at the world that we live in, and it's madness. But here we have people that wake up every morning and go to work and do their duty to family and friends and to the world. How else could we operate as a civilization if it wasn't through cooperation? So,
question from the lodge.
Yes, please.
Yes, go ahead.
So, how do we begin then? I mean, we have this knowledge about what can be done to obtain the virtuous, victorious mind. But how do we actually, I mean, do we need a teacher? Is this something we can do on our own? How do we actually go about starting this?
Where do we begin this journey? Where we said the mind, is there anything further?
Well, we begin where we are. We don't have to go anywhere. We begin where we are. And we need reminders of where the path lies. And we have those reminders. We have spiritual books, which is a constant reminder. We have the Bhagavad Gita, that when we read it, it's in a cipher. It has seven meanings or levels of understanding. The voice of the silence, where the heart of this material was taken from this morning, is a guide for us along the way. But as stated, we start where we are. We look within and try to find what is our motive for coming to this study? To gain this knowledge? For what? For who? For what reason? So it takes us back to that fundamental idea of selfishness, unselfishness, and selflessness. The voice of the silence speaks of selflessness. The Gita speaks of selflessness. How can we attain that? The seven paramitas. We just do our best. We have a teacher, HPB. But she is not our real teacher. It is those that stand behind her. Those wise ones, those Mahatmas. We put our faith in them. And what we have in writing is a gift to us from ourselves, because we wanted this knowledge. But again, why do we want it? It is a great question, because we live in this world of selfishness, and we know exactly how that controls our life.
Question?
Yes, please.
Just to go back to that question about how the intellect, the unvirtuous intellect, let's put it that way, makes the conflict worse. We would think that we have various sensations that we have various desires, but we find that the unvirtuous intellect is preoccupied with figuring out what are the best ways, what are the smartest ways, what are the cleverest ways of obtaining the gratifications of my senses or the gratifications of my personal desires. So the intellect, therefore, becomes the instigator or the empowerer, because animals have desires and senses. But as human beings, they can be a lot more destructive and harmful because of the application of our intellect to them.
You know, we made a statement that the mind fructifies attachment to objects of sense. Well, what does fructify? Well, it bears more. You know, our attachment, our mind's attachment to our senses enslaves the mind. And a virtuous mind is not pulled down by the sense life. There is a soul life. And again, that's the difference between being-ness and being. So we have to gain knowledge, because, you know, we want to do duty, our duty. We want to help. But if we do not have knowledge, the helping may do more harm than help. The virtuous mind is one in which one feels love for another. Now, if you are a compassionate being, no one should upset us, because we understand why they are upset. We understand why they do wrong, because the world is captivated by their senses. We see in the world around us people scurrying to and fro. Busy, busy, busy with the things of life. and thinking that what they are doing has meaning. Yes, ULT?
You have another question here. Go ahead.
But don't we need the intellect to help us obtain knowledge? Don't we need that? Or is it just the extent that intellect can take over the heart?
So, did you hear that, everyone?
No, we couldn't understand.
Okay, the intellect is necessary, but how does it relate to the heart? Because if it's overused, we are told that it tends downward to materialism and separateness. So how do we think with our heart, we guess, maybe would be the, how do we think with our heart?
Well, we think we are told to think with our heart and feel with our mind. And that this integration of mind and heart is a union of the experience of life and divine perception. It's our conscience, is the link between the higher and lower. So that the mind must become virtuous, it must become loving, it must become harmonious, it must become patient, it must become indifferent. JCS?
Well, can we really judge the activity level of the hubbub of life that we see in others? Is that our duty, to be trying to determine motive in somebody else? It may be that those folks that are rushing around between two or three jobs or the duties of home in their own house, plus an elder in another house, plus just everyday existence, it may be that their motive and their centeredness is truly virtuous and pure. So is that our task?
That duty to another is the highest of virtues. It is the God of this world. But we're not, judging others. But we see in the philosophy that if we cannot separate the real from the unreal, we become trapped. And that the world that we live in, the majority of the world is trapped in their desires. They don't have a soul life. Their life is busy when the activity of the senses. That's just the reality. Only the few will look and try to see what is truly real. Do we need to have three jobs? Do we need to want more? We need to help others, truly. But what do we need? It's all based on want and desire and what our perceptions are of the world. So we don't judge others, by no means, but we have to be honest, because even we, our mind is deluded by our senses. It takes a lifetime or lifetimes to discern the real from the unreal. We are born into our senses. That's what this life is for, to garner experience. We all probably were slapped on the bottom when we entered this world. Wake up, you're here. And truly, we are woke up. But now, what do we do with that awakening? How do we guide it? How do we stay on the path? Because we know there are a lot of obstacles to our attaining any kind of a virtuous life. But the obstacles we have set up ourselves through our selfishness. We find that our truly virtuous moments is when we have sacrificed for others. Sometimes as parents, we sacrifice where we shouldn't.
Asel's hand is up.
Yes, please.
Before the question was asked, we've been given this knowledge. How do we begin? How do we practically begin? So we notice that the Upanishads are basically questions and answers between the student and the teacher. The Platonic dialogues, the Socratic dialogues, are basically questions and answers between the student and the teacher. So perhaps a way to begin is to question, be aware of our actions, our desires, our senses, and question ourselves, is this what I should do, or should I follow one of the virtues? Is this, am I deceiving myself here through my attachments, or am I trying to follow something higher? So it is from that initial questioning that we first developed awareness, or what is called discrimination. You have to begin to question before you can discern a difference.
We would find that comment very helpful, because we have to learn to discern, to discriminate. And that can only be done by comparing and contrast. That's what we learn to develop on this material plane.
JCS has a hand.
JCS?
You know, through the decades attending these study groups and talks, it's been remarkable to see the array of souls coming from a variety of religious backgrounds and economic backgrounds and social backgrounds, but very importantly, so many have seemed to be dissatisfied or unfulfilled by a variety of different religious paths that they've taken in life. Does this questioning, this discernment, is that common to most folks that come into ULT, that there's something missing? Is that coming from within them, within the virtuous mind, or the potentially blended heart and mind?
Everything comes from within outward. That's how we manifest, from within outward. And the crux of the question was what?
It's just seems like that seeking the path, that initial questioning, is already there within us if we'll only listen to it or open ourselves as mind beings to be aware of that I want to say thirst for truth.
Well, we think in the last comment that questioning is the beginning. You know, that comparing, that discrimination between what we feel and what we see or what we hear. In many religions, the head of the religion does not match the heart of it. For many, the heart of a religion is all embracing. We are that religion because our heart understands it. But then we hear the dictates and the ideas, the dogma that's created, and it's illogical. It's immoral. So we have the conflict. So this is where the battle begins. In the Gita as well. And we have to take up that fight. ULT?
So one observation that we've made going along with the last observation is that we are many and varied, and we would not normally mix in a work environment or a church environment. So the ULT transcends all that. But being that it is, that we come from many paths, we also stress here impersonality so that we do our best to level the playing field, because we're soul beings. We're seekers and we're soul beings that are striving to transcend the hubbub, the materiality, and all the distractions of life. It's an oasis, and it's a school, and it's a means by where we can transcend.
Yes. Selfishness is a vacuum. And as long as we're selfish, we're separate. And only we begin to emerge like a caterpillar from a cocoon of selfishness and separateness into unselfishness and that butterfly of selflessness, of beauty, and of freedom. SL?
So if we look at questioning as a cause with the right motivation, the effect must come back to the questioner. And the natural response or reaction to a question is an answer from one who knows. And this is pretty much what is taught in the Bhagavad Gita, that if we begin to question with humility and the right motive, the teacher will appear under law. And we think that's one of the ways we approach the Mahatmas, or the knowers, and why they respond to us. Because we ask for it. HPB wrote this in the just the very first page, of title page of The Secret Doctrine, where she says that it's for all theosophists because they called it forth. They, in other words, they asked for it and it was put forth. So if we want more knowledge, if we want the teacher, we have to ask, we have to set up the cause by the sincere search for truth.
Yes, we have to make a step towards them. We have to make the effort. They can't come into this realm or in this astral world of the senses that we have created. You know, that around man whirls the elemental kingdom. And it's this elemental world in which we are imprisoned because of our thoughts and desires. So, it's with gratitude that we accept this knowledge. And it's with humility that we come to it. Again, it goes back to our motive. Why do I want to know this philosophy? For power? For novelty? To be different? To help humanity? And what does that mean? Well, we each have to interpret that for ourselves. We need to do our duty, or that which is in front of us to do, and not to turn away from what we see. ULT?
Well, we are different. Not that it's intentional, but just by our very nature, there are many groups out there that do a lot of good. And there are many fellowships in the world, 12-step programs, but there are always social distinctions. Now, we do our best not to do that. And in that way, we are different.
Well, we are different. There's no doubt about that, because we've all come from different places. We've all had different experience. And coming together, when we're united in study and in duty, where we're trying to create unity and brotherhood, we take up the gauntlet of impersonality, because what divides us is our personality. And underneath that personality, we're all the same. The personality is our tool that we use to gather information from this plane. But we become so enamored with the desires, with the fascinations of life, with the phantasmagoria of existence, the cacophony of ideas and sounds, you know, that we are so distracted that we need to turn within and not be so aware of our differences, but become more and more aware of our similarities. We are soul beings. Our real being is not this personal idea. That will disappear. The soul will not. And all of the higher aspirations, all the divine ideas that we can take from this life, they are united with us in our higher mind, because it only can assimilate those highest aspirations. All the lower are left to that lower field, that unreal, that ever-changing. These ideas have been passed down to us through generations of wise ones, adepts and seers. We have kept, or we are trying to keep, these ideas alive. And we can, and we do that through the dissemination of these ideas of theosophy and their three fundamental principles. We invite you to come to our meetings on Friday evenings, Sunday mornings, and on Wednesday evenings to refresh, to renew, to invigorate our understanding of our soul nature. We hope you've found these ideas at least stimulating, and that we welcome you to our association, and we will see you Wednesday at 7:30. Meeting adjourned.